So we're reading from Canto 4, Chapter 26, entitled King Puranjana Goes to the Forest to Hunt. Text 10. Shashan Varahan Mahishan. Shashan Varahan Mahishan. Gavayan Rurushalyakan. Gavayan Rurushalyakan. Medhyan Anyangshcha Vividhan. Medhyan Anyangshcha Vividhan. Vinignan Shramam Adyagat. Vinignan Shraman Adyagat. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. In this way, King Puranjana killed many animals, including rabbits, boars, buffalo, bison, black deer, porcupines, and other game animals. After killing and killing, the king became very tired. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Excuse me. A person in the mood of ignorance commits many sinful activities. And the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu Srila Rupa Goswami explains that a man becomes sinful out of ignorance only. The resultant effect of sinful life is suffering. Thus, those who are not in knowledge, who commit violations of the standard laws, are subject to be punished under the criminal laws. Similarly, the laws of nature are very stringent. If a child touches fire without knowing the effect, he must be burned, even though he is only a child. If a child violates the law of nature, there is no compassion. Only through ignorance does a person violate the laws of nature, and when he comes to knowledge, he does not commit any more sinful acts. The king became tired after killing so many animals. When a man comes in contact with a saintly person, he becomes aware of the stringent laws of nature and thus becomes a religious person. Irreligious persons are like animals. But in this Krishna consciousness movement, such person can come to a sense of understanding things as they are and abandon the four principles of prohibited activities, namely illicit sex life, meat eating, gambling, and intoxication. This is the beginning of religious life. Those who are so-called religious and indulge in these four principles of prohibited activities are pseudo-religionists. Religious life and sinful activity cannot parallel one another. If one is serious in accepting a religious life or the path of salvation, he must adhere to the four basic rules and regulations. However sinful a man may be, if he receives knowledge from the proper spiritual master and repents his past activities in his sinful life and stops them, he immediately becomes eligible to return home back to Godhead. This is made possible just by following the rules and regulations given by the Shastra and following the bona fide spiritual master. At present, the whole world is on the verge of retiring from a blind materialistic civilization, which may be likened to hunting animals in the forest. People should take advantage of this Krishna consciousness movement and leave their troublesome life of killing. It is said that the killers of animals should neither live nor die. If they live only to kill animals and enjoy women, life is not very prosperous. And as soon as a killer dies, he enters the cycle of birth and death in the lower species of life. That also is not desirable. The conclusion is that killers should retire from the killing business and take to this Krishna consciousness movement to make their life perfect. A confused, frustrated man cannot get relief by committing suicide, because suicide will simply lead him to take birth in the lower species of life or to remain a ghost, unable to attain a gross material body. Therefore, the perfect course is to retire altogether from sinful activities and take up Krishna consciousness. In this way, one can become completely perfect and go back home, back to Godhead. A translation one more time. In this way, King Puranjana killed many animals, including rabbits, boars, buffalo, bison, black deer, porcupines, and other game animals. After killing and killing, the king became very tired. 언마기안 티메란다시아 기안안자나 찰라카야 착슈룬 밀리탐 예나 타스마이 슈리 구라베 나마하 슈리 체타냐 마노 비슈탐 스타피탐 예나 부탈레 스바얌 루파 카다마얌 다다티 스와파단티캄 Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavanscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahaganad Lagunatam Vitang Tang Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahaganat Lalita Shri Vishakantang Tangstra Hey Krishna Karuna Sindo Dina Bando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Kripasundubhya evacha Patitanam pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo namo namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. Okay. So we're still studying the section of King Puranjana. Now, after in the previous chapter, we've heard all about hunting the opposite sex. Now, another kind of hunting is being discussed, the hunting of animals, which is, as Prabhupada says, related to the previous topic. It's based on the same principles. And now Narada Muni is instructing King Prachinabharishad. Now, just if we reflect a little bit on who King Prachinabharishad is, he's actually a very elevated personality. He's described as the great-grandson of Prithu Maharaj and Archie. They are considered to be plenary portions of Vishnu and Lakshmi. So just looking at the family line, you can see that he's coming from a very elevated family. Also his grandfather, his father, they've been described as very elevated devotees who actually, on the strength of their piety, they went back to Godhead. On the strength of their devotional service, they went back to Godhead. King Barishad himself, he is also the emperor of the world. He has performed many, many sacrifices for prosperity, also for development of the kingdom. So he is, like, just from that we can understand that he has a lot of opulence, he has a lot of power. He's a very pious king. Now the problem which is described that he had was he was a little bit too attached to his to material opulences which accompany the post of a king. As a king, it's described, as a king you have to have material opulences in order to be taken serious by the public. Because you have to rule over somebody, they have to see that you are more elevated than them than they are. They have to see that you are more powerful than they are. So you've been given a lot of material opulence. Now the problem or the danger now is that to become attached to these and to use these for your personal sense gratification, sense enjoyment. And it's described, Prabhupada describes in the previous chapters that King Barishad has been misled a little bit by these karmic activities. He has performed so many sacrifices, and now Narada Muni comes and preaches to him, and of course the king is a very elevated person, very proud, attached. So there has to be different means of preaching. Narada Muni is very expert. We know that from various incidents where Narada Muni comes and preaches. He's very creative in finding ways to reach people. And now he's using an allegory, the allegory of King Puranjana, to reach out to the king. And even though the king is very elevated, still this is a very relevant instructions for us, because What does Puranjana mean? Prabhupada translates it as within the body, somebody who lives within a body, and this is all of us. We all have a material body. So this Puranjana really represents all of us and what can happen to all of us. So this is very, these are very relevant instructions. And so at this point here, we're talking about hunting. And Narada Muni, he's always very expert at specifically preaching two things, renunciation and nonviolence. And nonviolence, not killing animals. There's several instances also where he preaches these two things. One I could think of was the sons of Daksha. He preached to them about renunciation, and Daksha got really angry several times. He sent his sons to the forest. Narada Muni comes and preaches to them to give up material life. And then also another example of where Narada Muni preaches about nonviolence is the instance of Mrigari, the hunter. And he was killing animals. Actually, he just injured the animals so badly that they suffered like incessantly pain, so that they eventually died from the pain that they suffered. He didn't even kill the animals. So then Narada Muni comes and says, okay, well, why don't you start killing the animals, like straightforward, if you want to kill them. And so he again uses different devices to preach to the person very expertly. And then he gives them the mantra Mara. I mean, you chant Mara long enough, Mara, 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 Rama, 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 it becomes Rama. So he became a devotee of the Lord eventually. So, yeah, again, he also, Narada Muni, preaches to Prachina Bharishad about giving up animal sacrifices, really, because also it's described before that the king was performing these animal sacrifices, and Narada Muni, he already showed the king all the animals, like in one of the previous chapters it's described. He showed him all the animals, and he showed him, these are the animals that you have killed in your sacrifices. Now, they are just waiting for you to leave your body so that they can pierce your body. Because in the course of a sacrifice, you promise the animal that, okay, in your future life, you can kill me. So this is one of the agreements in this Karmakanda, Karmakanda sacrifices, that, you know, there's a kind of a bargain, a contract there. And so Narada Muni had showed him all the animals that he had killed. But that obviously was not enough for Prachina Bharishad to give up these animal sacrifices. So now he uses this analogy of Puranjana, who goes to the forest and kills many animals, to convince Prachina Bharishad to stop hunting. And the purport here is divided, or I divided the purport here in three parts that I would like to elaborate on. The first thing Prabhupada talks about is ignorance as the root cause of suffering. And the second part I'd like to elaborate on a little bit is that of the process of devotional service and how that can mitigate all suffering and uproot this root cause or ignorance. And then the third part is also for us very important, Srila Prabhupada's mood of compassion. He appeals here to the entire society to take up Krishna consciousness because he can feel the suffering of the entire society, of everybody who's involved in hunting, animal killing, and also different types of hunting that we have seen here. But first I'd like to elaborate a little bit about hunting, because the verse is about hunting. And actually, the first time when I came and when I was seriously confronted with the topic of hunting animals, very like literally down to earth, was when I was in Alaska last summer. Because here, where I came from, hunting animals is not really a big topic. Not many people do it, and if people do it, it's only for subsistence or just to regulate species, population of species. So I never really kind of thought about it seriously, but when I was in Alaska, I've met so many people who told me the glories of going hunting, and in Alaska itself, people went hunting. Well, I asked for permission to talk about that, and it was granted. So excuse me, but it'll come to a point, hopefully. So then I was seriously like thinking about that, and also discussing with people like, Why do you hunt? What is it that's really so attractive for you? And some answers were it's for subsistence, subsistence hunting. That's mainly to regulate the amount of animals that are there. Of course, this is just another so-called solution for a problem that we have created in the past, because we have taken away living space for animals by whatever elaborating or expanding our own living space. So animals don't have living space anymore, so they go into the cities and they create havoc in the cities, so they have to be, you know, killed. Or we also pollute the environment so badly that certain species are extinct, so they don't have natural enemies anymore. So that's why certain species take over, and that's why they need to be hunted down, so the numbers, so that they don't create havoc for humans, they don't eat the crops, they don't attack humans. So okay, you know, like, it's a bad solution for a problem we have created based on mismanagement. And okay, but there's a sort of, you can sort of kind of, I mean, understand to some extent, it's a job, people are hired to do that. But then if you, I talk to other people also who, I mean, least number of people who are hunting are actually subsistence hunters. Most number of people that are hunting do it because they like it. They just like to kill animals. And I was talking to one gentleman while I was working in Alaska, and we spent a lot of time like talking about different things. He was a very pious person, like, otherwise. But then at some point he said that I just really like hunting because I get a kick out of it. And this was so like revealing for me to just hear that. And yesterday we heard from Mataji that we kill animals because, based on our envy, we don't want them to live. We don't want other living entities to be alive. Prabhupada had explained that on Monday, this envy, this root cause for our miseries. And also I thought, as soon as I heard that, he used the word, I get a kick out of it. And I thought, this kick is what brings us to the material world and what keeps us in the material world perpetually, like keeps us like suffering and going through different species of life. Just this intoxicating desire for exploiting and enjoying other living entities and resources around us. And this is not just hunting animals, but this is really hunting like sense objects here. I was asked yesterday by one devotee if these, and we talked about the verse a little bit, and this devotee was asking me if these animals, they represent something, because this is an allegory, so everything is metaphorically used. And of course, these animals, they represent the sense objects that we are hunting after. And so there's so many different types of sense enjoyments that we try to hunt after, and it's so intoxicating, this kind of the kick that we get out of it. And even the like previously we had discussed, and Prabhupada always brings that in context, the hunting for the opposite sex, the attention that we wanna get. So we put so much energy into attracting the opposite sex, hunting the opposite sex in different ways, and the attention that we get from that is just so intoxicating. That we lose our intelligence, and so many things that are described in the Bhagavad Gita. And also I was thinking this is really the root cause for the present economic problems. The economic system is based on capitalism. Capitalism is based on greed, this hunting after so many like different sense objects that are presented, like the donkey who's given a carrot in front of the nose, and then the donkey walks and is supposed to kind of catch the carrot, but it never quite gets it. And this is us trying to enjoy the material world. We see something and we catch it, and it doesn't quite satisfy us, so we catch something else. And this is the principle of this is the economic principle right now. Oh, this is going to make you happy. This certain object is going to make you happy. This product really kind of brings your health back to perfection. This kind of little machine is going to make your life perfect and fixes all your relationships. We're being promised so many different things by scientists, philosophers, even religionists. So many like artificial little carrots that we should hold on to, that we should grab, that we should hunt after, that will make our life perfect. But Prabhupada says actually none of these things are able to, you know, to really help us. And we've seen it the last 150 years, 200 years, I guess, time of industrialization, where we keep expanding so much and developing so much materially, but still the level of happiness goes down, the level of distress goes up, heart diseases go up, depression rate goes up. So it actually doesn't make us happy. And we've seen it in this, also in this beautiful documentary, The Lost Village, that His Holiness Lokanath Maharaj had put together so beautifully. The people go to the cities more and more based on this kind of greed. They want to have something more. And then they end up in the slums, and they're just being more miserable than in the villages they had lived before. Also, a third reason for hunting, Shri Shri Radha Gopinath Ki. A third reason for hunting that I was thinking of is also for survival. Like some people, they really have to hunt in order to survive. And that's also sanctioned to some extent in the scriptures. If people live at a place where there's no whatever fruit or vegetables available, they have to hunt. And also in Alaska, there was like the native Indians that are living close to the Arctic Circle. There's just snow basically all year long. You can't really grow anything. So they have to hunt for survival. And also, based on the same principle, but another observation that I could make there was the plants, like the vegetation. When you observe the, I mean, there's a beautiful, the place where I lived there, it was like really beautiful, like just from the plants. Everything there was really small, like short, like the big bushes that are usually, like the trees are really like tall. They're really short because of the extreme climate. It's called the vegetation zones, or like taiga and tundra, for those who are a little bit interested in biology. And the colors are very strong, and the smells of the flowers are very strong. So that, of course, for us makes it very beautiful. If something looks really nice, it's pretty, and you kind of enjoy it. But then one time I was going on a lot of hikes, and one time I was going on a guided hike with some naturalist who was explaining to us the different functions of the plants and the different names, and you're getting educated there. So you eat different things, and it's kind of like very, very educational. But then at some point, he was kind of a humorous gentleman, and at some point he turns to us and he's like, "Is there anybody in this group below age 16? And we're like, "Oh, there wasn't anybody." So then he had just explained how the plants really are so rich in their color and the smell, and so which is so nice for us. And then he said, "Well, they put all their energy in procreation, because the growing season is so short, and the mating season is so short. So you have like 3 months of growing season and 6 months of snow. So within these 3 months, all these plants need to procreate." So they put all the energy into these signs which attract insects, which distribute the pollen, and so on, so that the species can survive. Because if they don't manage to distribute the pollen far enough, or the seeds far enough throughout these 3 months, then the survival of the species is not guaranteed. And then I was also thinking, how much time and energy do we spend in trying to be attractive to others, trying to get attention from others, hunting for sense objects? And this also guarantees our survival in the material world after the winter of death comes. Like, we leave our body, and then because we've hunted after so many, we've cultivated so many desires for enjoying the sense objects, that we're getting another body. So we're really also securing our, like, the transmigratory process in the material world. Also, like, by the desires we have now, we're creating another body already now. Like, with the things, if you meditate on sense objects, that already creates another body. So by this hunting process, we're also securing our survival here in the material world. But that's maybe not exactly, but as devotees, we understand that that's not the goal of life, of course. And also, especially when we are young, senses are very strong. And I recently heard a beautiful lecture from His Holiness Giriraj Maharaj, and he pointed out something interesting. He said that from the age, up to the age of 20, you think that everybody looks at you, You're the center of everybody's attention, and everybody likes you. And so then you said that from the age of 20 to 40, you think that everybody looks at you, you're still the center of the universe of everybody, but nobody likes you. And then he said, after the age of 40, you start to realize, maybe not everybody looks at me, maybe not everybody takes me so seriously. Maybe there's other things that are also important in life. And so he's putting so much time and energy into making ourselves the center of the universe, kind of attractive for others and for like so many different things. And this is really the problem for so many complications. Like, if we are the center of the universe, then life becomes so complicated, because we try to make everything like according to our like nice according to our circumstance. We try to arrange our situation so that we can be happy, so that we can feel comfortable. But we know the material world is just not a place for. There's no perfect happiness in the material world. So then that's a very problematic situation for us. It becomes very complicated. And also this, the root cause that Prabhupada describes for all of that is ignorance or avidya, which is described in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu in the very beginning. And Prabhupada describes then also that the only way to uproot avidya is developing of devotional service, because other processes may help us to uproot some sinful reactions. Like if we perform yoga, we can uproot a certain amount of sinful reactions. Or if you perform meditation or pious activities, sacrifices, all these kind of things. So they're very good, very pious activities. But they don't uproot deceit, the misidentification from ourselves as the enjoyers and controllers in this material world. So the only process that works, that goes down to the bottom line, is practicing devotional service. And why is that? Because then we understand, or we come to an understanding gradually, that by the mercy of the spiritual masters, Prabhupada points out here, that we are eternal servants of Krishna, and this is real knowledge. And this is the only knowledge that works to really uproot suffering, because with all the other processes, we still remain a trace, an understanding of we are still the center of the universe, like what Giriraj Maharaj had explained. So also Prabhupada explains here so beautifully that there's no material disqualification. Also in Nectar of Devotion, a lot of chapters are actually dedicated to explaining that point. There's no material impediment to performing devotional service. No, birth is not an impediment, or even diseases, or it's also described varnashram duties. Devotional service is transcendental to any of material circumstance. We can always perform devotional service no matter in which situation we are in. Even if we're really sick, there's always a way we can meditate on Krishna, we can perform some sort of service. So there's no restrictions in that way, because also it's the nature of the soul to perform devotional service. So nothing can actually stop us, no matter which situation we are in, no matter which circumstance we find ourselves in. And Prabhupada, him being a pure devotee of the Lord, who's para dukkha dukkha, you can feel the suffering of other living entities. He also points out so beautifully here in the purport that everybody, the whole society, has turned into this forest where animals are being hunted. Animals representing for sense object, represent the sense objects. So this entire society is based on this kind of like trying to grasp the carrot business. We try to hunt for sense objects, and Prabhupada feels the suffering that comes along with it. And very elevated devotees, not just elevated, but even ourselves, like sometimes we feel, or oftentimes people that are close to us, we can feel when they're suffering, right? We can feel the misery that they go through. Like sometimes when somebody's in distress, or a friend or something, we just feel the pain that they feel. And so a Vaishnava by nature feels the suffering of every living entity, and Prabhupada, he feels the pain of the entire society. And he appeals to all of us, please take to this Krishna consciousness to uproot your suffering, and also spread it to other people, like distribute it as far as possible, so that this miserable condition, this miserable situation is being counteracted or that we can overcome that. So concludingly, I would just like to say here that instead of hunting for sense enjoyment, we can look at the scriptures and see what they're suggesting, what we should hunt after, or what we should search after. And the scriptures repeatedly tell us we should look for Krishna, search for Krishna in every circumstance. In the Chatushloki Bhagavat, in the second chapter of second canto of the Bhagavat, the four seed verses, the last seed verse, the last of these verses describes that if you look for the absolute truth, you should look for it in all circumstances, at all times, anywhere, everywhere, directly and indirectly. So we should always hunt after Krishna, look for Krishna, make this little carrot, make that Krishna. Okay, where is Krishna? Also, in the Vedanta Sutras, the first instruction that's given there is Athato Brahma Jigyasa. Then, therefore, there's the inquiry into Brahman. And there has been different commentaries on what that exactly means, but Prabhupada often just says, okay, now you have attained a human form of life, inquire into Brahman, like ask for Krishna, who are you? This was also the first question that Sanatana Goswami has asked Lord Chaitanya. Sanatana Goswami is a highly elevated devotee, and he meets Lord Chaitanya and he says, my dear Lord, everybody calls me a very learned person, but I don't even know who I am. Kayami, tell me, who am I? This is the first question in spiritual life that we ask. And so instead of hunting for the sense gratification, hunting for material sense objects which don't bring happiness ever, like lastingly, permanently, we should look for Krishna. Like what also the Goswamis, Srinivas Acharya has written this beautiful verse. Hey Radhe Braja Devaki Chalalite, Hey Nanda Shuno Kuta, Shri Govardhana Kalpa Padapatale, Kalindi Vani Kuta. Oh Krishna, where are you? Are you Radha Krishna? Are you at the banks of Govardhan? Are you at Govardhan? Are you at the banks of the Kalindi? Oh son of Nanda Maharaj, where are you? Like this constant looking, this constant search for Krishna. If you can replace that with our search for sense gratification, Prabhupada says, then we will achieve perfection. And Lord Chaitanya has made this process so easy for us. He said, okay, just simply chant Hare Krishna, keep your heart simple and receptive for the mercy of the Lord, and in this way you will achieve this perfection, you will bring Krishna back into your hearts, achieve the happiness. So also when Lord Chaitanya goes to the Jarikanda forest, he also goes to a forest, but instead of hunting the animals, he transforms the animals. And he transforms all the animals so that they dance together and chant the holy names together. So in a similar way, we pray for this transformation of ourselves through his Sankirtan mission, through his Sankirtan Yajna, that we can, instead of hunting the animals, we can dance together and chant the holy names of the Lord. And also we can help everybody else to come to that point of dancing together and chanting the holy names of the Lord. Okay, on that note, I'd like to end. Just repeat a little bit what I was trying to say. I was talking about hunting, the different types of hunting, like different reasons for hunting. I might mention three reasons for hunting. Then also the ignorance, which is the root cause of all that. Then Srila Prabhupada's mission of bringing Krishna consciousness to everyone, also to ourselves. We should take up this process very seriously. To reach perfection, as Prabhupada says here, in this way one can become perfectly, completely perfect and go back home, back to Godhead, simply if you can transform that hunting mentality into a search for Krishna. If there's any comments, questions, corrections? Yes.
Last 25 years. like, he knew exactly what kind of weather would be that day. And it was like a big trouble. He couldn't move, he could hardly walk in the end. And it was like, that's the end. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks.
Any other point about inquiring of the Dharma about the absolute truth? That's actually the purpose of the Dharma. What should you inquire from the conservation mindset? If you have that, which is quite common in this world at this time, then you're going to get the conservation mindset.
Thank you. Very important point. Also, Prabhupada talks about that you need to hear from a spiritual master, a bona fide spiritual master, and follow the instructions, and through that, perfection will come about. Thank you. Well, it's also on the cost of others, but then the cost for others is that we drag them with us to Krishna. Because if we look for Krishna, then we'll influence also all everybody around us, and we will ask them, where is Krishna, where can I find Krishna? And we'll remind them of Krishna. I don't know, it's the first thing that comes to mind. But, hunting for Krishna is maybe not the right word. Searching for Krishna is maybe a better word. But it's... Right. Yeah. Thank you for making that point, for kind of bringing that up, because it seems that when we misunderstand this hunting for Krishna, it seems that there's only this kind of neophyte mentality of, okay, there's only Krishna, we go for Krishna, and we just don't care about the other devotees around us. That's perhaps... But this is... Right, yeah, it's a good sense. And also, through that intensity, we are supposed to develop compassion for other living entities, to feel also their suffering and wanting to give them Krishna. And I think at some point also we understand that without anybody around us, we won't be able to understand Krishna, to get Krishna. We need the help of people around us. And if you want to serve Krishna, Krishna also says, okay, don't try to serve me directly, but serve my devotees. So then... of course, if we want to search for Krishna, then we search in those people who know him, who have him. And these are also the prayers of the acharyas. Please, you know Krishna, you have Krishna, please give him to me. So in that sense, maybe we can broaden that analogy, that we actually hunt after the dust of those who have Krishna. And then we take this dust of the lotus feet of those and keep it sacred in our lives. Maybe that's a better kind of analogy of... Well, thank you for correcting that.
So, one of the destinies of one person is also we go to hell there. You be punished there. And it said in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the intention of punishment is to bring identity mentally towards God. Okay. Do you understand that?
The punishment.
The intention of punishment is to turn the identity.
Right.
And I was thinking that why the demonstrate punish the cannot have Yamaraj himself, like, you know, preach to them and enlighten them. They turn actually their mentally towards God. Why should go for this punishment? Because, okay, in punishment, maybe they can make the people like. Become very accepted that they're also like even by seeing the situation can become accepted and can get benefit from not preaching by the amount.
Right.
I cannot really just enlighten poor souls who are not present.
Right. So why do they have to undergo the karmic reactions instead of just getting directly like some preaching or something? Yet it's also sometimes I'm wondering why does karma work in a certain way, because like now we're building up already reactions for many births in advance, and so now maybe in this life something happens to us which we have done in like few births ago, and so we don't remember. So, and as a teacher you're being told if you punish somebody, do it immediately so that the person knows why they're being punished for. So then the laws of karma, they seem like very impractical of teaching us the lessons that we have to learn, because what do I remember what I've done like so many lifetimes ago? So this is the sort of question you're asking. Why is that? It seems inefficient to teach us to go back to Godhead.
Yeah,
or to Right. It's a relevant question. Anybody? Jabara? Some people don't learn.
Thank you.
I can repeat. I can repeat your point. Yeah, thank you very much. Very important point. Yes.
What about tribes that have to kill lions to separate children and stuff?
The what?
What about tribes that have to kill lions that attack the villages?
Well, there are so you're asking about in a dangerous situation when an animal comes and attacks people, then what about that killing? Well, that's not really hunting, no. I mean, that's defending yourself, and there is in scriptures there are certain incidents where killing is allowed, and so one of them is when you're being attacked. I guess it also applies for animals. Okay, should we stop or? Sorry. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Grandharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Sri Harinam Sankirtan Yagya ki jai, Gaura Premanande.